scenario kind of like this where we, you know, whether it's on the work front or relational front, wherever it might be, where we get a snippet of information. I mean, you just get a small piece, maybe a fact, maybe you just see something, maybe you hear something, and we have this amazing way of doing mental gymnastics, right? I mean, we take that little snippet, we begin to play it out, we begin to make interpretations, we begin to make judgments on it before we get the rest of the story. And before long, we're all worked up. We think certain things are the way. We're just sure they're that way. And we're totally out of touch with reality. And I think as we're going to see today, as we take a look at this idea of career breakthroughs, you know, this scene kind of depicts some of the behaviors that we oftentimes go through that create barriers, that create sticking points in our jobs, in our careers, in our workplaces. And so we're going to take a look at that today. We're really glad you're here. My name's Kurt, by the way. I'm a pastor here at Cross Point. And if you're a guest with us today, again, welcome. We're excited you're here. We realize there's 100 other places you could be, things you could be doing. And so we consider it a privilege for you to join us here. As Eric said, we're in week number 2 of Everyday Breakthroughs, and we're taking a look at how to create those breakthroughs. It's a time of year when we kind of say, you know, I want to go to new places. It's the beginning of another year. And we look back at the previous year. We kind of identify some of the areas that we want to make change, maybe create a different trajectory. And yet oftentimes we think it's kind of a one-time decision. I'm going to make one change, one decision that will take me to a new place. And we fail to see that this has to do with everyday breakthroughs. It has to do with the everyday decisions that we make that create the sustainable breakthrough that actually allows us to go to a new place. So we're going to be taking a look at that again today in terms of what that means in our workplace, in our careers, whatever that might be for us. Before we do that, let's take a moment and pray. God, I'm thankful that we're in this place today. I'm thankful we can come into a dark room such as this and spend a little over an hour together, and we can experience things, we can see things, we can hear things that maybe we're not going to hear in other places. And God, we realize that you champion our freedom. In fact, I don't know that there's a being or an entity today that exists that champions our freedom like you champion our freedom. You don't like it when we're stuck. You want to help us move forward. You want to help us to experience and go to new places and to live freely and fulfilled and full of passion and purpose and be effective. And so, God, I'm going to ask that as we kind of dialogue today, as we take a look and have a conversation on some of the barriers when it comes to our workplaces, that you would just help us to identify where we're stuck and help us to begin to get a clear picture of the role that we're playing in that, and maybe seeing things and maybe even get a taste of the freedom that you call us toward. And so I just pray that you'd meet us in this place and that you guide us, that you'd help us to be clear, articulate in everything we say. I pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. Well, you know, if you're with us last week, again today, we're going to bring an expert to join me today. You know, these are topics that are very broad, and there's a lot of advice. And so I want to welcome back to the stage Scott McDonald, if you want to help me in welcoming him today. And Scott was with us last weekend. I know, Scott, many people connected with much of what you shared. Welcome. Great to have you here today.
Thanks.
And, you know, Scott is a friend of mine, but if you're newer to Cross Point, you know, Scott is also kind of connected to this community. Doesn't attend Cross Point. He's a member of our governing board, an outside member to help give us input and advice from an outside perspective. But Scott is very well versed in leadership. I mean, you're a leadership guru. You know, Scott is kind of a high capacity leader in the corporate world, understands how to move people forward. That's what you do for a living. It just kind of, you know, lead people, develop leadership systems, behavior models, I mean, things that help people go to new places. And I'm telling you this not to pump Scott up, because I know some of us are like, well, who's this guy coming up here to speak? You know, well, sometimes we know, hey, this is somebody who's grounded. Scott and his wife, Lisa, also co-lead a marriage ministry called Dynamic Marriage at Northview Church, and really understand the relational aspect of creating breakthroughs as well. And these are critical. If we're talking about creating breakthroughs in our workplaces, these are critical things. And so last week we started with relationships. How do we create those relational breakthroughs to go to new places? And this is really foundational for what we're going to be talking about today. I mean, these things build on one another.
Absolutely. So if you weren't able to join us last week, just a quick preview of what we talked about. Excuse me. Whenever you are relationally stuck, there's typically a crucial conversation that you're either not having or not having well. So in other words, there's a difficult conversation that needs to be had. And what happens, unfortunately, is that biologically we are wired for bad interactions, right? Adrenaline goes coursing through our body. We're not thinking clearly. And we end up going to one of two places. We go into silent mode or we go into violent mode. And the only way out of that is dialogue. And we have to create safe environments in order to get there. You know, I think the best thing to do, if you really want to follow this series all the way through, is go back and listen to the podcast of week one, because there are some great foundational things for what we're going to be talking about today.
Yes, you can go to wearecrosspoint.com, and there's a place for podcasts. You can download that, listen to it on your iPod or your listening device. You know, today we're going to be talking about career breakthroughs. And you know, this obviously has a component of relationships in it as well, because anything significant that happens in the world happens through teams. And yet, you know, there's a lot of places we could go with this today. I mean, there's things like, you know, are we in the right job? Do we have the right talent and gift mix for where we are? You know, we could look at leadership and behavior profiles, which you do a lot of, I know. You know, we could look at things like, you know, calling and purpose, and do I need to change jobs? There's a lot of ways we could attack this today. I really want us to hone in on the way we behave in our current jobs and how we might create some of the sticking places. Because, you know, it's one of those things. Let's be honest, we may not be in the right job right now. You might be in a job that's simply just paying the bills. May not be your career job. And yet I really want us to focus on the here and the now. Not what may come, but how can I make breakthroughs in my career the position I'm in right now, whether that's in the workplace, whether it's in, you know, a warehouse, if it's in a cubicle somewhere, if it's in your home, rearing and raising your children as a stay-at-home mother or father. I mean, that's a big job. And these things apply across the board. And so, you know, this is something God calls us to be effective and productive in whatever our work is. In fact, Paul talks about this in Colossians chapter 3. In fact, here's his words. He paints us a picture of this. He says, do your work willingly as though you were serving the Lord himself and not just your earthly master. In fact, the Lord Jesus Christ is the one who you're really serving, and you know that he will reward you. And so, you know, as we think about this, the Bible says, hey, work hard and do it with sincerity of heart, with passion at all times, even when the boss isn't looking, all right? We all amp it up when the boss is around, right? But Paul's saying, hey, when the boss isn't around, you're still supposed to go through and give it sincerity, give it passion, do your job, be effective. And as I think about this, I think, you know, there's probably been no time in my working life where I've been more excited or thrilled with having a job than right now. And so, you know, wherever you are in your position, let's hone in and say, with what my role is right now, how can I create a breakthrough? How can I maybe go to a new place? So let's look at some situations that sometimes create those sticking points.
Absolutely. So let's paint three pictures, and maybe one of these might connect with you, or maybe you can relate to a situation a friend is going through. Let's imagine first you've been in the same position for a long period of time, and you've been trying to produce extra work, but that extra work really isn't getting you anywhere. And you began kind of this storyline of why would I do anything above and beyond, right? It becomes the 8 to 5, 9 to 5 kind of thing. You're clocking in, clocking out, because you've convinced yourself that extra work, hard effort is not rewarded, right? That's one scenario. Second, where you might be stuck. You're sitting around with your friends, your coworkers after work, and you begin telling stories about the evil overlord that is also formerly known as your boss, right?
Yeah, these people don't do that.
No, I'm sure.
Especially my staff, I'm sure.
I'm sure, yes. Wow. Do we need to talk?
No.
Okay. So you pick your name, Darth Vader, whatever you want to call the boss, right? You begin telling stories, and those stories continue to feed on the fact that your boss is this this evil kind of person that's overlooking and overseeing and orchestrating your demise within the organization, right? And then the third may be just simply you are unemployed right now. You're in a situation where you've been trying hard for a period of time, and a lot of people are going through this, and you continue to put forth effort, but you're not seeing the results of that effort, and you're getting frustrated. And unfortunately, that frustration becomes a storyline, and the storyline is a tragedy. It spills over into your family, your loved ones, and in your interactions with others.
Yeah, and I think we probably can all relate to one of those scenarios at one point or another. There's many other scenarios of places where we get stuck, we feel like we're just not moving forward. I think the key word in that, though, is story. The key word is story, that there are stories that you and I tell ourselves in life. I mean, this applies to all relationships, but specifically in our jobs. You know, you don't get to pick who you work next to all the time. I mean, it'd be great. You don't get to pick your family, for that matter. I mean, those are sometimes the most difficult people. But, you know, we tell ourselves stories to kind of justify our behavior. And it happens happens quickly, and you might be thinking, well, I don't tell myself stories, and that sounds like I'm lying or I'm making stuff up. Well, you actually do. You and I do it all the time. In fact, in many of my dialogues with people, in the counseling realm of helping people take steps, oftentimes I think this is one of the places where we begin to tell ourselves things are certain ways in our workplace when they're not. And so we've kind of become out of touch with reality because our mind just begins to do all these mental gymnastics. And so, let's take a look at how this plays out. I mean, we want to be effective in our jobs. When we're stuck, we're not effective, we're not productive. Often we're not satisfied. And so how do we begin to track on that?
Yeah, so it's the same as we talked about before. There's a biological reaction that happens, right? You get some facts and you begin to formulate opinions from those facts. And that becomes a story. In fact, let's kind of look through what exactly happens when you're in a situation where you're uninspired or disenfranchised. And keep in mind, there are other reasons for this, but typically there's a story that you're telling yourself. And so we want to kind of unpack this a little bit more. The first thing that happens, let's just do a scenario here, right? First thing that happens is you see, hear, or experience something, right? Let's just imagine your boss gave you a project to do. And that project isn't that important of a project, but it's something that needs some attention. And over the course of the next 60 minutes, your boss checks in on you 3 times, right? So you're starting to notice something's going on here. The boss is checking in on me. What's going on here? The second thing that happens is you start telling yourself a story, right? Gosh, do they think I'm incompetent? I mean, does this person really need to check up on me 3 times? I mean, what does that say about my workload? And maybe you interact with another person. They say, oh, gosh, yeah, so-and-so doesn't, I heard them talking about you the other day and it wasn't favorable. Oh, really? Oh, well, gosh, clearly I've got something wrong here. Then the third step is that generates a feeling. Right? The story actually creates a feeling within you. And that feeling is anger. Maybe you start holding a grudge. Maybe you start distancing yourself from the manager. Maybe all of these emotions are coming into play with your frustration with work, and it gets worse and kind of compounds upon one another. And then the last thing that happens, the worst thing that could happen, is you start acting on it. Right? You not just hold a grudge for your manager, your leader, your boss, Darth Vader, whatever you want to call them, right? Then you start talking to other people. Your actions become words with others, and they start telling stories about how the person doesn't trust them. And it just creates an environment that was all based on a story. You know, the phrase that always comes to my mind is misery loves company. And when you're in a work situation and it's your boss and they're watching over you, you can find a lot of people that want to be your friend.
And it's interesting because, one of the things I want us to see is these are not just, leadership, corporate principles that are healthy to live by, but Scripture actually points to this. I mean, have you ever noticed anything in the business world that makes sense and works usually is founded in Scripture? Almost always it's the case. Jesus says something important about this. In fact, Jesus was asked one time, what's the most important thing? And he says, well, love God, love God. And everybody's like, hey, I can do that. I can love God. And then he goes on, he says, but there's something else to it as well that's equally important. And that has to do with loving others. And it's like he wouldn't separate the two. He says, hey, love me, love God, love my Father, but also love others. In fact, it's almost like he's saying one of the ways we show our love for God is the way that we love other people. And I know a lot of us, we're like, man, I got the loving God thing. It's all the screw-ups around me that are screwing my love relationship up. Because I can get along with God fine. Which you're kind of out of reality if you think that's true, but you just have a hard time loving on people. All right, and so Jesus is like, you got to love God, love people. And so the Apostle Paul actually gives us this word picture. He paints a great picture for us of what it means to love, what love looks like. In fact, in his first letter to the people in the city of Corinth, which is a city that has a bunch of new Christians, people who are just being exposed to the story of God, they're going and Paul's writing to them to instruct them on how to live. And here's the word picture he paints for him. He says, love is very patient and kind, never jealous or envious, never boastful or proud, never haughty or selfish or rude. Now you immediately might be thinking, well, yeah, I've heard that. In fact, that may have been read at your wedding or something, whenever I meet with a couple to plan their ceremony for a wedding, oftentimes they'll say, well, let's do that wedding passage out of the Bible. And I'm like, well, which one are you talking about? You want the one that says, wives submit to your husbands? And they're like, oh, no, 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 not that one. You know, I mean, I know where they're going, but, you know, this has kind of been deemed as the wedding passage. Well, you know, let me be really clear. Paul did not write this for weddings, all right? We've kind of made it into that. This is not written for weddings. We've made it because that relationship's so critical. But take a look at the words that he uses to describe love. He says, love does not demand its own way. It's not irritable or touchy. It does not hold grudges, and it will hardly even notice when others do it wrong. And so if you're villainizing someone, if you're you know, saying, man, I got Darth Vader as a boss, I mean, you're noticing when other people are doing wrong. And I've highlighted, those emphases are mine up there. I've put the bolding because I want you to look at those phrases. Paul says, love is not irritable or touchy. It doesn't hold grudges. It will hardly even notice when others do it wrong. And so we have this way of working these stories up, and we begin to do all three of, we actually don't execute on all three of these fronts when stories begin to prevail. Take a look at the rest of his passage here. He says, love is never glad about injustice, always rejoices whenever truth wins out. If you love someone, you'll be loyal to them no matter what the cost. You'll always believe in them, always expect the best of them, and always stand your ground in defending them. Again, three key phrases right there that again, when we begin to tell stories, our motive deteriorates, as we looked at last week. And each of these things take a hit. We begin to believe the worst. I can't believe they did that. They said that. You know, we begin to think, well, they're just out to get me. You know, and often we don't stand up and defend them when, you know, the misery loves company. We jump in quickly. And then God goes on and says, you know, all the special gifts and powers come from God, but someday those will come to an end, but love will go on forever. And this is a critical piece. This is a really important picture of what it looks like to interact with our colleagues in the workplace.
Right. The problem with stories is they paralyze us, right? Stories produce inaction. Stories create an excuse for us to not act on something or to avoid a difficult situation. It's, again, it's something mentally we do because we always want to put a story to any fact that might be out there. But the reality is we're often just guessing, right? It's like the story that we're creating has a few fill-ins and the rest are blanks. And what happens mentally, because we don't understand the motive of the person that's across the desk from us, we begin filling in those blanks mentally, right? And then to just couple that, it happens very quickly. If you were here last week, you know, typically when we're in an emotional environment, we have adrenaline coursing through our body. We're not thinking from a higher reasoning perspective, so it happens quickly. We're saying and doing things that we don't normally do, and then we become our own worst enemy, right? Our mind immediately goes to, what is the worst and most hurtful thing that I can think about this person? Because that's how they're thinking about me. It's unfortunate that we go to a negative place when we're in that environment, but it just happens, right? We're filling in the blanks, we're hurt by something, and emotionally it drives us to that place. You know, we create our stories. We create them, right? We control the story. But what happens immediately after that is the story begins controlling us. So if you want to change the results you're getting, you have to find a way to change that story.
Yeah, case in point, just this week I received a voicemail. Had a phone call come in, couldn't take it at the moment, left a voicemail. And typically when this person calls, I know what that call is about. And so I said, I'll put it off, I'll respond later. In my mind, I began to work up what they needed, you know, what they wanted from me. I mean, you know, and 4 hours later I listened to the voicemail and find they're actually offering to help me with something. You know, it's just an amazing way that very quickly we get one little interaction and then the story takes over. And so, you know, the challenge is we have to identify, you know, where do I tell stories? Where are they happening? Where are they actually causing me to be stuck with my colleagues, with my boss, maybe in productivity? And so help us understand how we identify that.
Yeah, well, the first thing is obvious, right? We have to learn how to separate fact from story. How to separate myth from reality. That storyline that we're talking about that we've created, we have to pull out the parts that are actually real and start identifying those. You know, there's an example that I always use when I'm talking about this. Picture a busy intersection in New York City, right? And a lot of people waiting to cross the street. Elderly woman walks up and a young man grabs her arm and they walk across the street safely. Right? When they get across the street, she's reaching out into her purse, pulling out a little tip just to thank the young man for guiding her across the street. And she notices the young man is digging into his pocket to pull out something to give her and thank her because he's blind and he needed someone to walk him across the street. right? They both were telling stories. She was saying, this nice young man is guiding me across the street. And he was saying, this nice person is helping me cross the street. Now, that's a positive example of stories. Unfortunately, where we normally go is into a dark place because we've been offended, hurt, or we feel resentful. But that's an example of how our mind can immediately go to stories without seeing the facts. Facts are audible. They're visual. They're scientifically viable, right? That's what facts are. They're the things in a room. I can look around the room and say half of you are either sleeping or praying right now.
They're all
right?
Sleeping. I'm pretty confident.
They're sleeping?
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
No, we're a very spiritual community, so
yes.
I know you all are praying.
Yes.
That's what I think every week when I look up.
Yes. But when your head's down like this, I could tell a story. I could tell all sorts of stories about what I'm observing from this angle. But the reality is I'm just looking through a lens right now, and I'm filling in the blanks on what I'm observing. The stories, on the other hand, are those inferences that we make. It's the judgments that we begin to pass. It's all of the things that we base upon the fact, but we really don't know for sure. And that's the sticky, sticky area that we can get in, because they're judgments that are made on facts, not factual.
Well, and sometimes, you know, I get myself in the scenario because I'm like, well, I'm intuitive. I mean, I can read a scenario well, but again, it's in that point where I don't have all of the data that often the stories develop. In fact, I had a conversation with a contemporary of mine, a guy who we work with on some leadership fronts, and he, you know, he talked with me a few months ago about how he's having a hard time keeping an admin assistant in his office. He's just kind of rotating through admin assistants, and just off the cuff, he said, you know, good help is hard to find these days. And it was interesting because I just had some assessments done recently and contacted their office and found that, you know, I followed up with his assistant who I thought I would be getting an email back from, only to get an email back from someone else. So he was like on his fourth assistant in the last year. And I was just like, wow. So, you know, good help is hard to find, is actually a story.
Yeah.
All right, right? I mean, that's a story that he's telling himself that's causing him to get stuck right there. You know, sometimes we have to say, you know, if we're really honest, we can continue to believe that, or we can begin to ask the question, you know, is good help really hard to find? Or maybe I'm a hard person to work for. I mean, maybe, I can't keep a person in the seat because of the way I interact with them, or maybe the job description is unclear and what they think it is isn't what it really ends up being. I mean, there's a number of factors, but all of a sudden there's kind of a paralyzed sense. Because, you know, he feels like, man, I'm stuck, and because good help is just hard to find.
Right. So we talk about separating fact from story, but really what we need to start doing is identifying the kinds of stories that we tell. And there are three primary categories of stories that we tell ourselves, particularly in a work environment, but it does apply everywhere. The first one is a victim story, right? I'm an innocent bystander in this situation. I have no impact on the outcome whatsoever. That's a comfortable place to be in because you can look at everyone else in their situation and say, you know, to your point, good help is hard to find. I don't have any role in the help that's actually in here. It's all them and how they respond and how they handle things. That's a victim story. The second is a villain story. Back to Darth Vader, which we've mentioned several times, right? We tell ourselves that there's a villain. That we assume the bad and the wrong in everyone except us, right? We are the thing that is good and pure in this situation, and someone else is always coming from a bad place. And I would venture to say we've all told ourselves a villain story, probably more frequently than we like. You know, I talk about my company that I work for right now. I tell you, there is public enemy number one that works in this company. And she is in a high-level position, and everyone in the company loves telling stories about public enemy number one. I'll refer to her.
That's a good. That's
right?
Safe.
Safe, yes. Yeah. Safe. So my job at leading a team is to try and constantly remind them, they've been through some of this material we've talked about, and remind them that they're telling stories. You know, and you can easily do that. Is that a story, or are those facts? And 9 times out of 10, they're basing it off of things they've experienced before, right? They're villainizing someone. They're assuming the bad and the wrong in that person. And then the last category of stories that we tell is the helpless story. We're all familiar with the helpless story, right? There is nothing that I can do to make things better. There's absolutely nothing that I can do, so I'm going to go to a place of silence or violence because that's the only way I'm genetically wired to handle things. Mm-hmm. And these three stories, they bring about, they come from a place of emotion because that's what mm-hmm. we've told ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get to a solution is to retrace our steps back to that story mm-hmm. and begin removing some of the feelings that we have, assessing our role in the situation, humanizing other people rather than demonizing other people, and then asking, what kind of actions can we take next, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, for many of us, as we think about our careers, wherever that may be, you know, if it's in the workplace, if it's at home, wherever you do work, you know, you've probably had some things coming to mind. I mean, you know, here's a place where I'm stuck. You know, and even as we're talking, as Scott kind of lays out the, you know, how we look at these three things, I want you to ask yourself, am I telling myself any stories in each of these areas? So help us see how we do that.
Yeah, so let's go back to the victim story, right? So how do we catch ourselves when we're in the middle of a victim story or help someone navigate a victim story, right? So we have to turn ourselves from victim into actor, right? Instead of being a victim and being impacted, an actor has a role in the overall solution, right? An actor has a role in the overall play or movie. And we have to begin viewing ourselves as someone that can take action that can impact this. It's simple. You just ask the question, am I pretending to not see my role in this situation? Remember what we talked about last week. Questions are an irritant to the brain. When your higher reasoning is being replaced by adrenaline pumping through your body, you have to ask yourself questions. And this is a great question to ask yourself. Am I pretending to not see my role in the problem? Because a lot of times when you ask yourself that question, if you're being really honest, you can see you do have a role, right? You do have a role. You're not just a helpless victim that can't do anything. The next is the villain story, right? So this is where we're assuming the worst, and the obvious answer is we have to start assuming the best. We have to see others' motives as purer than maybe what we've factually seen before. And let me tell you, this can be hard because you've been probably telling yourself a villain story for quite some time, and you've got plenty of facts to back it up. But facts from history don't always mean that that person's coming from a bad place right now. I'll tell you, I've made a lot of dumb decisions in my professional career. I would not want everyone to base how I make decisions now based upon all of my history. And that's what we have to do with stories. We have to remove the history and deal with facts. And when we can begin doing that, we can ask ourselves a question, why would a reasonable and rational person do this? Now, again, some of you are saying, you don't understand my boss. There is nothing reasonable or rational about them. I get that. I understand that. But we have to humanize the person instead of demonize them. We have to ask ourselves those questions. Why would a reasonable, rational person do this? And chances are you can find an answer that is a different motive, a more positive motive.
You know, it happened the other day when I was driving down the highway. You know, I'm sitting there. Somebody let me into traffic. I mean, this is out of the workplace, but this is how it plays out. Pulling into traffic, somebody kindly lets me in. You know, the next car, you know, speeds up next to me, tries to get in front of me. I'm like, well, what do they think? And they think, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they're trying to like force their way in, you know, to this small gap in front of me. And what am I doing? I'm immediately villainizing them. You know, and I was just in their situation. And here I am, I'm, you know, standing on the accelerator. I'm trying to let them know, like, they're not coming in here. And yet they're in the same boat I was in a moment ago. I was doing the very same behavior. And yet when I look at them, I have a way of saying, man, that's terrible. I can't believe people drive like that. You know, and my blood pressure just rises. And that's how it happens in the workplace.
And thanks for cutting me off, by the way.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. The third is that helpless category, right? This is where we feel there's nothing that we can do that can advance the situation. And the obvious answer here is we have to commit to some sort of corrective action. We have to figure out that we are not an innocent bystander in the situation. We have to decide what we really want out of the situation, what's right, and do something about it. The question we have to ask ourselves is, what can I do right now to move this toward what I really want? You know, it's interesting when we're in these situations, we find comfort in stories. Mm-hmm. Stories keep us in a comfortable place because we know the action that we have to take is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. We have to confront someone. We have to have a difficult conversation. We have to do something that takes us a little bit out of our normal thing. But if we fail to do anything, inaction produces nothing. Inaction never produces results, right? The opposite of action never produces results. All it produces is fear, resentment, anger, casualties. Mm-hmm. Inaction produces casualties. But action, on the other hand, doesn't always produce results. We're not here to tell you you're always going to sail through every situation, but it at least gives you a fighting chance. Right? Action at least gives you a fighting chance so that you can break out of whatever helpless story that you're telling yourself. But you have to commit to the corrective action. And you have to do it right away. When you realize it, you have to figure out what the right action would be and do something about it.
Yeah, when I have conversations with people, which I have pretty frequently about, you know, man, am I in the right place? I'm not feeling fulfilled in my current job. I want to be happier. And typically the only response, or at least the understood response in that scenario is, man, I've just got to find a new pasture. Okay, I need to get out of this. I need to go to a new place. And you know, and sometimes that needs to happen. But that's why we're focusing on where I'm at right now, my current role. Because what I often see is you know, people fail to see. I fail to see at times that there are adjustments I need to make right now, because I can go to a new pasture. You know what happens when you get in the new pasture? They follow you. Yeah. You know, these behaviors follow us to new places. And so we end up in the same scenario. And so we have to say, you know, what is the barrier? What's the thing that's causing my sticking point? And there may be others. I mean, we're not exhausting this, but this is one, the way we tell stories, in my opinion, has become one of the most destructive, disruptive to effectiveness, to job satisfaction, to just total fulfillment. And people leaving jobs they never, you know, that maybe they were meant to be in. And it comes back to that whole idea of, you know, I think most times we fail to realize that our everyday choices actually, you know, create our destiny. We play an active role in our destiny. And it's not the big one-time decision. It's the everyday small decisions that continue to take us or not allow us to go to new places. And so, again, our heart for this series is really to say, you know, how can we make breakthroughs? How, you know, not just to get some good data, not to hear, you know, some good leadership principles or, you know, some good scriptural principles, but how do I take this and internalize and say, okay, what is my role in this? How can I do some self-evaluation and go to a new place so that at the end of this year, you know, at the end of 2012, I'm not left with the same questions? Am I in the right job? You know, I'm still dealing, struggling with my boss. I'm still on the same project. I'm not getting promoted. I'm, you know, maybe I'm not in the right position or the right occupation. I mean, our goal is that we can move to new places as we go through this year. And so as we do that, I want you to take out your connection cards as we kind of wrap up. And, you know, this is something we do every week here at Cross Point. On the back side, Eric asked you to fill these out earlier. On the back side are some next steps. And every week, if you're newer to Cross Point, you know, every week we ask you to say, you know, just what's a next step I can take today? You know, what's a step I can take, regardless of where I am, to take a step forward? You know, when I'm with Scott, I mean, oftentimes he'll, you know, I'll ask him to help me process through some daunting projects, get a handle on them, and he always says this phrase to me over and over. You know, whenever I'm faced with this huge elephant, you know, he'll say,
"How do you eat an elephant?
How do you eat an elephant?" And you do it
one bite at a time,
right? I mean, whenever you're facing something, the only way you can do it is take one little step after another to address, you know, your situation, your barrier. And so, you know, as I began to think about, you know, what is it, how do we wrap this up? You know, there's one verse that kept coming to my mind. And I was kind of shying away from it. I was thinking, you know, I don't know that that's it. I don't know why this is it. But it just kept emerging for me. And usually when that happens, it means that there's a word in this. There's something in this passage that really is going to connect broadly. And it comes from Jeremiah chapter 29. And you've probably heard it before. It's a very familiar passage. But, you know, Prophet Jeremiah is kind of at a place, a sticking place, and God is encouraging him. And here's what he says to him. He says, "Jeremiah, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, to not harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future." And you know, for some of us, we've maybe read that 100 times. For others of us, maybe we've heard it for the first time. But you know, there's some truth in that. And as you look at those words, "I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you a hope, plans to give you a future." I know for some of us, if we're really stuck right now, you look at those words and you have a hard time believing that those are for you. You're sitting there going, you know, man, God has given up on me. You know, I'm unmarketable now. I mean, there's nothing available. These are all stories. You know, this is the story God has. He says, "Hey, I have plans for you. I want to prosper you. I want to give you a bright future." And the thing you and I have to do is say, you know, where am I at? And what's my role in continuing to pursue and allow God to bring this about? You know, a few years back, I just about left ministry. I just about threw in the towel. Said, man, I'm done. I'm getting out of this thing. And I grew up in ministry. I grew up in the church. I grew up with my dad was a pastor. I saw the backside of him. I saw the sausage factory side. Some of you didn't know there's a sausage factory side. There isn't everything. You know, I understood that. I knew it. I knew the demands. I knew, you know, the way that people would sometimes villainize you. I mean, you know, it still happens. But it was just a really difficult time. Didn't feel productive. I felt stuck. Felt like I wasn't going anywhere. Wasn't taking the group I was leading anywhere. And it was a very frustrating time, and I got to the place where I was ready to just go to a new pasture. And I actually made a call to Ball State. I made a call to their master's program, talked to a counselor there to say, you know, I just want to impact kids. I was doing student ministry at the time. I just want to be in a place where I'm actually making a difference in the lives of kids. Because I'd been telling myself that wasn't happening anymore here. And so I was on the phone, and they were kind of walking me through a program I could begin, you know, where I took a few core educational classes, then I could begin a master's program and get a teaching degree. And you know, I thought, man, this is it. This is my solution right here. Here's the one quick fix right here. And then somewhere in the midst of that next week or two, I came across this seminar. It was called, How to Identify Your Personal Mission Statement for Work and for Life. And it was just a half-day seminar based on the book, The Path by Lori Beth Jones. And it began to take me through a process that helped me see, you know, what my life is about, why I'm here, what's the core value that Kurt is about. And the thing that emerged through this was that my life is about creating life change, creating environments for life change and people to experience fullness and wholeness. And as I began to sift and process through that, I began to say, you know, I'm in the perfect position to do that every day of my working career. And so I had to back up and say, what are some of the things I'm telling myself, I'm convinced myself of, that I'm believing that aren't true in this scenario? In fact, it was kind of like this. I don't know if you've ever brought some 3D glasses. I don't know if you've ever wore 3D glasses before. You know what? Like the first time I went to a 3D film, I remember putting these things on, and you probably saw me driving down the street with these the other day.
That's
didn't you?
When you cut me off.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, I remember walking in. I put these things on. I was very skeptical. And man, when that movie came up, it was like, whoa! It's like the everything was full. It was right there, and I'm like reaching out to touch things. And you know, in my immature moment, I thought, well, man, if that's what it does to a movie, I wonder what it does to the rest of life. So I started wearing these things. I looked like this. I walked around like a geek for like 2 or 3 days wearing 3D glasses. And what I realized is these are only good in the movie theater. Which is a story, by the way, when you're looking at stories. In fact, when I'm really trying to understand reality, these actually blur reality. I mean, these don't work the rest of life. And it just reminded me that sometimes my eyes deceive me. Sometimes my eyes, what I see or that snippet isn't the full story. And what I came to in that moment was, man, if I walk out and throw in the towel right here, man, I may miss the thing God has literally created my life for. Not that it's just one thing, but going to a new pasture doesn't solve the problems, doesn't remove the stuckness. And so, you know, as we wrap up, I want you to think, you know, where am I stuck? You know, where am I stuck in my career, with my employees, with my boss, and my relationships in the office? And as you think about that, what kind of stories am I telling myself? You know, am I playing a victim role? Man, I'm a victim. I'm just kind of the innocent bystander. You know, am I in a place where I'm villainizing someone? Man, they're always that way. They're never going to change. And you know, have you made somebody into the villain, your boss, the person in the cubicle next to you, the girl that cuts hair in the stall, you know, on the other side of your studio? You know, am I telling myself helpless stories? I'm not making a difference. I can't really do anything. I'm not really making any impact. And what's the story you're telling yourself? And as the band sings, you know, process through these next steps. Just ask yourself, you know, God, what's my next step? What's the step you have in my work, whatever that might be, that will help me go to a new place, be more authentic, more productive, create positive emotions so I can fulfill the thing you've called me to do. So process through this as we sing.